When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Hello and welcome to yet another Moto1.com Test Car Happy Hour. Ladies and germs, we're so glad to have you here on this Thursday afternoon, August 3rd. Summer is one-third over. Are you guys missing it yet? Are you glad? Has the heat wave ended in your respective parts of the country?
No.
I mean, barely.
It's been beautiful here in lovely Ann Arbor, Michigan. It was in the 70s, the low 70s yesterday. I didn't have the air conditioning on all day. Sat outside. It was amazing. Guys, we've got kind of a fun show today. We've got a lot of performance cars to talk about, including some brand new ones. So I'm actually pretty stoked for this one. I want to encourage everybody out there listening and watching, as the audience grows, as it swells to triple, four digits, maybe even tens of thousands of people watching this live. That if you guys have any questions or comments about the cars that we're talking about, if there's anything you want to know, anything you want to dig in a little bit more, please do, by all means, wherever you're watching this, if it's on YouTube, if it's on Facebook. We are reconnected to Facebook, is that right?
Yep.
Okay, cool. We had a little Facebook hiccup for a while there. Ask a question, leave a comment, and super producer Kyle will throw it up on the screen and we will go from there. Let's get started with Jeffrey, the pony boy, because he has maybe the most exciting news of the week so far. He was far flung and driving a very exciting variant of a very exciting new car.
So I got to go to beautiful Charlotte, North Carolina to drive the new Ford Mustang Dark Horse, which is their 500 horsepower, naturally aspirated, track capable pony car. And we did actually get to drive it on the track there at Charlotte. They gave us half of the Roval. We couldn't do the whole, oval, but we got like half of it. And it was pretty good. I'm kind of a Mustang critic. I think in the past I've been a little critical of the car. It's just not it's not my type of car maybe. And so it's never really spoken to me. The Shelby is a phenomenal car. That is one of my favorite muscle cars ever. So I went into this one with pretty high expectations, hoping that this would sort of have some of that same appeal. And I think it really does as a track capable car. I wouldn't say it's like an amazing track car, but it is a track capable car. So you get the Coyote 5.0, 500 horsepower, the most powerful naturally aspirated 5.0. It's very specific. It's not like the most powerful Mustang, naturally aspirated Mustang. It's not the most powerful 5.0, but it is the most powerful naturally aspirated 5.0. 418 pound feet. Really, really slick 6-speed manual transmission. And then you get starts at 59. So it's a step above the GT, but it's not so much that it's like a Shelby. It's not anywhere close to a Shelby, I would say. But it does have this really interesting sort of next level up from the GT that makes it, I think, a pretty appealing Mustang if you're going in for the base model, right? $60,000, I think, is a really good price point for this car. It's phenomenal on the road. I really loved driving this on the road, although I would say that Charlotte's roads are pretty terrible. But it was pretty fun to drive on the road. That 6-speed is just so like quick and mechanical. Like, just you can have a lot of fun with this car. The V8 it's weird because I'm so used to sometimes that we're so used to supercharging and turbocharging now these days, where you get all that low end torque. Whereas you get into like an old school V8 like this, and you're like kind of expecting there to be a little bit more of a punch off the line, and there isn't. But the fun part of this car is when you like rev the hell out of it. You really have to rev it to redline, and this thing just sings. Like, it is such a charming V8, such a fun engine when you really ring it out. And it is, I don't know, just a lot of things I really, really liked about this car.
It's interesting to me right off the bat, Jeff, that like, to your point, like you're in a, and I know like the way that vehicle launches come together is sort of a dark art. Like there's lots of kind of availability, timing, weather, you know, depending on time of year and things like that. But to have you on a NASCAR track, right, in what is ostensibly kind of a handling car. No Mustang is a pure handling car, but it's a performance variant that's more about like track capability and overall handling and things like that, I would say, than like you're saying, something like just like a big ballsy Shelby or something like that. And then have you in a place where you don't have a particularly stirring road drive. It seems a little strange, right? Like how I guess, how is Ford talking about this car on the program? Is it just as like a one step up performance variant for the new Mustang, or are they looking at this as closer to, we know it won't be the Halo car, but where do you think it falls in that spectrum for them?
So a lot of people compared it to the previous gen Mach 1, which I haven't driven. But from what I heard, it's very similar, where they're really pushing the track capable thing. They want you to take your dark horse to the track. It has the big brakes. It has the handling package you can get as an option. It has Recaro. So it has, you know, some of the equipment you would need for like a weekend track day kind of thing. But it's not so hardcore that it's not fun to drive on the road, which I think is a problem that I run into a lot these days with certain cars that I've been critical of. And it's like, okay, well, you know, our car can do this on the track and it's this on the track. And then you drive it on the road and it's just like, almost lifeless, because it's so, you're like only getting a fraction of what it can really do on the road. Where I think the Mustang the Dark Horse sort of has that really nice blend where it does feel really good on the road and it does feel capable enough on the track. It's not like the best handling car or has the best steering or the best suspension I've ever felt. And like you said, the Shelby is still that top end, like that's the track Mustang you want. But I think it does a really good job of sort of blending the two as far as on-road and on-track capability.
Well, and they brought it out too. You did it on the Roval, right? So there was a pretty significant road course in the middle. So were you able to get like a good feeling for how it handles like closer to the limit?
Yeah. So the Roval that we got access to was basically turn one and turn two on the actual NASCAR oval. And then there was a chicane on the back end where you brake hard and basically do a 90 degree turn onto the infield course. And then you have the whole infield course, right? And then you sort of go do it again. So it was more infield than it was oval, which was good because ovals are scary. And this was this was like
a totally different kind of drive. Yeah.
I think it was like 20. Oh man, I wrote this in my review somewhere, 24 degree banking or something like that, which is more than I thought it was going to be. I did not expect Charlotte to be like a highly banked track like that. I think Daytona is like 30 degrees. So pretty steep, and I haven't driven a lot of ovals. So that was kind of scary. But then once you get it on the road course, it you can really push it. And there were some good, you know, blind corners and some downhill stuff, nothing like crazy elevation, nothing like that, but enough to where you really get a feel for the car on the track. And I mean, it's the Camaro is really good. I love the Camaro a lot. And I think this is really close to the Camaro in terms of suspension, tuning and balance, I would say. And I know some people do not like when I say that the steering is not great. And I say not great is like the catch-all term for me just being a steering snob. But it was like, it's a little light. It's a little vague on center. It kind of has that like give when you're on the road that it wiggles a little bit. but it's precise, super precise. You can flick it into a corner and be have a really sharp sort of it dives its nose really well into the corner, which I think was a problem with the previous Mustang, where it sort of felt like there was just too much weight on the front end and you didn't know what it was kind of doing. And I think they fixed that a little bit here, but just like a little tighter would make me happy. But
well, and Brett, you came back from driving the standard Mustang from doing the launch of the base car, both, you know, like all what three variants of the base car, right, that you guys ended up driving. Two engines, coupe and convertible. And you had some of the same concerns, right? I think everybody's kind of saying the headline is new Mustang is great, or Mustang continues to be great. But then within that, like there was some consistent feedback about the lack of feedback maybe in the steering, right?
Yeah, it's really lifeless. You don't get any weight in the middle of a corner, you know, when you're digging hard and you want to know exactly what the front tires are doing. You don't get any feedback in the middle of a corner, which is unfortunate, but it is really quick. I know Ford sharpened up the steering ratio a lot to kind of give it more of that like really quick dive toward, you know, the apex of a corner, like Jeff was talking about. And so, you know, they definitely like made some changes to it to make it feel livelier and sportier, but they didn't really add any like feedback or feel to the process. And it still feels totally overboosted to me, you know, just like way too light. It needs a heavier steering, like less steering assist, and it needs more feel. But, you know, to Jeff's point as well, the thing is just so, in so many other ways, it's so communicative and so visceral. Like the high RPM streak, this is a naturally aspirated cross-plane V8 that revs to 7,500 RPM, which is a higher red line than the Lotus Emira that I drove a couple of weeks ago. So like
wild.
In a world where a Mustang V8, where a Mustang GT or a Mustang Dark Horse is a higher red line than a Lotus, that's just bonkers to me.
Yeah. That is amazing. And again, like I hear consistently both from you guys and like, you know, as we're looking at other coverage across the automotive media spectrum, everybody seems to love this engine, right? Like the way that it sounds, the way that it delivers power. Of course, when you can rev it out, that's great for a sports car. Jeff, I was thinking when you were talking a little bit about where they're positioning Dark Horse 2, what I was hoping for and what this reminds me of a little bit is, it's, you know, we're talking about 8-9 years ago now, but when Mustang did the Boss 302 variant 2 generations ago, of course, then like, that was transformational for a car that I believe maybe it got a little bit more power, but it didn't get a lot more power. But the steering was far more precise. It was full of feedback. The car felt lighter. Like it felt like more of a track car than it did like a road car, although it was really subtle and beautiful on the road too. The difference being, I think that car was still using a hydraulic powered steering setup and not an E-Pass setup. So there was the ability, kind of an innate ability in that system, to deliver more feedback to the steering wheel too from the front tires, which is something that we're just going to have to get used to not having, because the Lotuses and McLarens of the world who can afford to do that like are fewer and further between. And if you care at all about efficiency and fuel economy and packaging, like you're just going to have to go with an electronic power assist setup at this point. But
yeah, and that's, I've been like I'm sure everybody who's watching this has heard me be critical of so many steering setups recently. Just the electronic power assist is like, it's good when it's good, and it's hard, but it's hard to get, I think, perfect. And yeah, it's just a new way forward, I guess.
Sure. So I mean, it's funny,
I think it's just going to take another generation of tweaking before it gets there.
Yeah.
That's probably a good list for us. I don't know that I could do it on the spot, but like the best, like full of feeling E-Pass steering racks that exist in performance cars today, right? Like that'd probably be a worthy thing for us to start keeping track of, because it's hard, it's possible. And I don't really know the magic that creates that sort of man machine bond when you've removed a hydraulic rack, but we have had those experiences in the past.
I mean, I don't know the science behind it, but Porsche nailed it right off the bat. Like their first car with E-Pass was as good as their hydraulic steering. I mean, like right off the bat. So there's a way to do it, and it apparently doesn't take experience. It just takes effort.
Yeah. Well, I will say too, I mean, Dark Horse, the name, I mentioned this in my review, that this is a brand new badge also, that Ford has never used this name on a car, on a Mustang. Which is the first time since the fourth gen Mustang. And I'm trying to figure out what badge that was on fourth gen Mustang that was brand new. And I have to go look, but
They just revamped the pony, like in the fourth gen. Was it? Yeah, they do. If memory serves, I think that they just modernized the pony that badge. In fact, I don't know where it is, but I have one lying around somewhere that they were handing out when they did that car's launch. But Dark Horse was is a new name for Ford, but was a Dark Horse Mustang in the past, created by Celine. That still probably ranks as the scariest Mustang I've ever driven in my entire life. It was incredible, but incredibly raw. I had something, I can't find whatever I wrote about it way back in the day, but it was 620 horsepower from a supercharged 5 liter, and in a Gen 4 Mustang that had like louvers and all this like sort of garish equipment, but definitely a very different proposition than this modern sports car that we have today.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say the Dark Horse having a new name, I think, is interesting because Ford has used so many retro and heritage names in the past, especially the last gen. They had Mach 1, they had GT350. Like having a new one, I kind of like the fresh start, and I kind of like the idea of like, okay, one, there's no like heritage that's going to like instantly make it a success, right? There's not, the name isn't going to sell this car, so you have to look at the performance, which is good, and then also like there's going to be no one complaining either about like, oh well, this, you know, this Dark Horse isn't as good as the last Dark Horse, because obviously there is none. So I like that they did that, and I like the badge. I think the badge is really cool, so I hope they kind of stick with this Dark Horse thing for a little bit as sort of a step up from the GT.
Yeah,
overall, it's funny. Sorry, I don't know if I missed something, my headphones cut out for just a minute there, but I started to say, usually, or very often on this show, we start by talking about the visuals and then move into the mechanicals, and I think we did it the other way. Am I alone in thinking that, especially in the red with the black like sticker pack on it? Like, I think the car looks pretty good overall. I'm in favor of the Mustang redesign. I think that like deep eyeshadow under the tiny headlights looks just god awful.
Yeah,
see, I kind of like it. I actually do kind of like that. I think I called it mascara in my review, which I'm sure Ford loved. But I like it. I actually think this is the best looking version of the Mustang, because I think the EcoBoost and the GT are pretty bad looking. I don't think they look good at all. I think they really they look way too soft. The taillights are bad. The headlights
are the same taillights.
Yeah, I know. I never said that the taillights here were good, but the wing helps. The wing helps the back look better, and the black looks okay on the front. So I don't know. I just don't. This generation Mustang design kind of doesn't work as a whole for me.
Jeff, you always have to like, right when I'm agreeing with you completely 100%, you always have to find a way to screw it up.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I don't generally mind the slim headlight thing and the, you know, like we're doing a lot, like we're changing those lighting profiles a lot. I think it's usually pretty cool. And generally speaking, I do. Like I said, I think the car looks pretty good. In there, now we're seeing, I mean, it's zoomed out, but the darker one, whether it's black or like dark gray with that same package, I think maybe looks a little bit cooler. The black wheels look tiny and they make the body work really heavy. I would want a lighter wheel on this car to you know, if it were mine. To make it pop a little bit more, and I would do whatever I could. Like, is this available without that trim and tape package, or is that part of the Dark Horse bit?
Yeah,
like, can I get a normal hood?
Yeah, you can get a normal hood. You can get it totally. I think this car right here is just totally blacked out with no graphics or anything, which you can get. And then I think you can get the silver or the lighter wheels. I want to say they're like a gunmetal. Okay. You can get those with no graphics or anything. So I agree. That's probably the setup to go for.
All right, I'll build one in the configurator and see whether or not I can revise my opinion overall, because it's a taste level thing. And obviously, I saw a lot of the red one like on the site and in lead up to that. That's probably the hero color, and it's not my cup of tea. So cool, man. Cool car. I'm excited. I haven't had any experience at all with new Mustang. We've got a whole new Mustang in the world. It's phenomenal. Like, again, as a baseline, that's pretty rad. So I'm excited to finally get some time at some point in all of the above, including maybe a convertible before the weather turns bad here. All right, let's move on to Mr. Evans. Another performance car. Let's see where are you in our you're number two, I think, in our horsepower war today. Yeah.
No, probably number three. I guess I don't know exactly what your car has, but this one makes 485. So. I think I'd be behind your M3 just a little bit, but it was still a very rad vehicle.
Super. Go ahead. Sorry. Yeah,
it was just really cool. So I drove the Chrysler 300C, which is a return of that trim level. 300C went away a couple years ago when it was kind of like a luxury trim. So you could either get the 300S or the 300C, sport and luxury. They brought it back, but as you can tell, it's just kind of like all sinister all the time. Got the dark headlights. It's got some body color accents and the like black chrome grille and that beautiful retro 300C badge. Big news, though, is under the hood where they put the 6.4-liter 392 Hemi. 485 horsepower, 475 pound-feet of torque, and they just threw the entire kitchen sink worth of like mid-tier performance products at this car. So you get adaptive dampers, four-piston Brembo front brakes, and then it's just kind of, other than that, it's just kind of your standard 300C. It's almost like a return of the old SRT8 300C, which went away in like 2014 or 2015, and it's just. It is just very, very cool. It was a very fun ride to have for 7 days.
Yeah, we talked about it on this podcast. I was in one of these a little bit a couple of weeks ago here in Michigan. It's funny that, you know, you start to see behind the curtain a little bit of what's happening. Like Chrysler is putting a few of these in the fleet for journalists to drive again. Like they're getting kind of one last push of selling this car that, listen, you go back and the 300 really remade Chrysler as a brand, 100%. At least Chrysler cars, like when it debuted, it was friggin' 20 years ago at this point.
Yeah.
But this has been a massively important model for, you know, Chrysler and then FCA and then probably less so in the Stellantis tenure so far. But still, it was a really, really important car when it debuted. And I think it kind of stands alone now in this American muscle category that everybody else has retreated from. So if you want something like this today, 2023, this is really only the only car that you can have, right?
Yeah.
It's the only one that they sell that hits this particular kind of performance and luxury form factor, I guess.
Well, and you know, to be totally honest, luxury is kind of a relative term in this case because this car is hugely dated. I mean, you look at the inside and it's got I think it has an 8-inch infotainment screen, which was cutting edge in 2013, but it just doesn't really do that much anymore. And so, you know, like, and you're definitely missing some features. You're missing some, the driver assist is fine, but it's not cutting edge in any way. So definitely you're not getting the full modern luxury experience, but it still just feels so anachronistic in this time and age, which is kind of a nice thing. Like my boyfriend was kind of making fun of me because we see slightly modified Challengers and Chargers all over the place where we live, and they're always driven by absolute redacted, like the worst automotive enthusiast in the world.
Yeah.
And I totally became one of them in my week with this car, because every time we'd walk up to it, I'd wait till we were 5 feet away and then I would do the remote start so I could hear the cold start from outside the car. Not because I needed the car to cool down, because I'd only do it 5 feet away. It was literally just to hear the exhaust. And then, you know, like pulling away from stoplights, I'd kind of pull away for 10 feet and then goose it and like really give it the full beans to get the like exhaust flaps to open up and scream. Like, it's just one of those cars that just makes you feel very, very like red-blooded American V8 kind of vibe. And it was great. The other weird thing that I was really surprised by, this super dated car, it came out in 2013. The platform dates back to 2005. It uses Mercedes technology from the 90s. Like, it's just a very like dated platform, all things considered. The steering is brilliant. The steering is so heavy and so communicative, very like well-weighted. The suspension is like remarkably compliant and remarkably well balanced. This is a heavy car, so it's obviously not going to be like really really reflexive, and you're not going to get like those instantaneous responses as you would in a smaller, lighter car, but it's still really just commendably like performance oriented for as old as it is, and communicative and balanced for as old as it is. You get a very good ride on the freeway, but then you can firm up the adaptive dampers and get, you know, a little bit more sport and a little bit more balance when you want to push hard. This was one of those cars that like I went for a drive just to go for a drive. And it, you know, that doesn't always happen. You can get very jaded with like lots of cool new cars nowadays. And this was one that I literally just took the long way home from work one day. It was just a fun car to do that in.
Yeah. I mean, this is absolutely an old man performance car in a lot of different ways. Right. But I think that you're right. You hit the nail on the head. Like there's something about having a really, it's not cushy. Like it doesn't feel like it floats. I actually think you're right. There's a good balance of like comfort and support, like in the suspension here. If you do want to, if you want to throw it into the corner, it's not going to be neat and tidy. You're going to have a little bit of drama, but the car will do what it's meant to do. But mostly if you're just kind of like charging down in a straight line, it feels awesome, right? It's not punishing to ride in despite big wheels. You've got all that torque and all that power. The engine just feels really creamy. Like, and really like it can do anything that you want it to do. I really dig it. Like, even knowing that it's something that's wildly outdated, and I'm sort of laughing to myself a little bit as we're watching this, because you can tell too, like we've got this B-roll stitched together where the most dynamic part is like somebody pulling into like a, you know, kind of middle average subdivision too.
For those, I was just going to say that. I was like, do they shoot this in a neighborhood?
There are like six neighborhoods like within 5 minute drive of me that could have been shot in.
It's not actually B-roll. They just followed the guy home who bought it.
Oh my god. That's super funny. So
I am just gonna point B-roll. out, without like implicating myself too much, I did find a really nice remote straight stretch of road. And I tried the launch control out, and usually launch control in most modern performance cars is designed to like get you off the line really, really fast. No wheel spin. The car manages all that for you and you just go. This one, I did the launch control and left probably 25 foot long, like smoky burnout behind me instead of actually going fast. And it's just like, that's just this car. It's like, we could get to 60 in 4.5 seconds, but wouldn't you rather go 20 miles an hour this entire stretch and just leave a smoky trail in your wake? That's just what this car does.
I absolutely would. Yeah. I also like, I complained a little bit when I had this car because I had to put kids in the back, and it's not weirdly like not ideally set up for that. But I have always loved, it feels like they haven't changed at all in the last decade, but the vaguely performance oriented, like really fat bolsters of these seats, I think are phenomenal. Again, large individual, I fit pretty nicely into them. It gives me just enough support, but I'm not doing any like track work in this car or anything like that. So it just feels like it's holding me in place and kind of giving me a light hug the entire time I'm in there, which is super nice.
I loved it.
Yeah.
I think I mentioned this when Seth was talking about it, the styling. I think you really have to kind of love it or hate it. And I'm not like a huge fan of it. Like, what is the big buy? What is the big reason to buy this over like a Charger with the same spec?
Just class, Jeff. Yeah. Just if you have
If you're an intelligent human being with style and panache.
I do love that badge. That badge is really good.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a really interesting question because a lot of people, I think, you know, and I was going to ask Brett this too, because I think maybe there's a different, it's a very different world driving and thinking about owning this car in LA versus in, you know, roughly Metro Detroit, right? Like here, it's not that weird. It's just, you're kind of pulling for the hometown team. And I would imagine like on a percentage basis, there's a much higher ownership of these around me than around either of you guys. But the Chrysler version has been a little, like I'm saying classier kind of half jokingly. I think historically maybe it had better, a slightly better interior, a little bit more chrome, like, and things like that, but it wasn't dramatically different. It's just a very different vibe. Dodge and Chrysler have always had really different sort of followings, right?
Yeah.
So sure. It's the vibes. I appreciate it.
It's the vibes.
I can buy a car based on vibes.
quickly going back to the comments, saying hi to Tia. She says, I'm here for the fun to drive cars. It makes the drive worth it. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think like a lot of us have to, especially in the business, make our bread and butter driving cars that lots of people buy. And those are important and those are fun to analyze and get into too. But we have a great selection today where we're talking about cars that mostly people buy because they care about driving and they want to have a lot of fun. So
be sure to check out some of Ms. Blackshear Collier's work. She's the president of the Texas Auto Writers Association. So she's got some good stuff out there too. So anyone watching, looking for another person to follow, that's a good person to follow.
Oh man, good call out too. And also to Tawa, we know that they're the masters of the universe. We're deciding when deciding which trucks are best is concerned. There's a huge truck rodeo that I've always been very jealous of not being able to attend. It sounds like it's full of shenanigans, to be honest. So nice. All right. Well, that's probably a wrap on 300C since we talked about it twice in about 3 weeks, and we will never speak of it again hereafter unless it comes up on an old car list. Thank you. Good work, Chrysler. I know it's sad but true. But
I'm gonna go buy one.
Let's do it. Now, I guess the question in the segue here is, Dodge did it. Did Chrysler ever make a purple 300C? I know a few people would know the answer to this. A plum crazy?
Was it? I don't think so. No, I think that was a Dodge only color. That was a heritage Damn Dodge it. Color.
Well, because I sort of jokingly said that I'm a purple car nut because this week I was in the, it's called Techno Violet is the particular shade of purple that BMW has done for this. I actually have to read it because it's a very complicated BMW S name. The 2023 BMW M3 Edition 50 Yara. And then there's some other stuff too that you could add. This is essentially like a kind of beefed up, slightly more powerful version of the M3 Competition xDrive, right? So we've got 503 horsepower, 479 pound-feet of torque coming from a twin turbocharged 3.6 liter. Just a monster of an engine. I mean, talk about a crazy, slightly more modern way to make a muscle car. This M3 is absolutely it. It's running through, all that power is going through all four wheels, or can be. I talk about that in a second, but this is a super fun car that BMW made to celebrate its own 50 years of making M cars, right? And we can start with the purple because I didn't know this until I got it. I just sort of thought this was a special color. But BMW, for this particular edition, which I believe is limited to 500 cars, only offered it in other colors that were offered on M3s in the past, right? So there's an M3 color from every generation. And I don't have them all off the top of my head. Maybe Kyle can find the list. But this one I know was an E36 M3 color specifically. I know that there's an orange that I saw was in press fleets. Other publications have photos of it. That's from an M3 that maybe Jeff and I share as our favorite M3 of all time, from the Lime Rock Park Edition M3, that orange. Can't remember the name of it, but it was cool. So they dug into their own history. They took really evocative paint colors from their own M products and then only offered this special 50 year anniversary version of this car in those, which in and of itself is awesome and will make a lot of BMW fans want to own it. Yeah, like I said, 500 plus horsepower out of this car. It's got extra carbon fiber, both on the interior and on the exterior. It looks really fantastic. It has got the M3 Competition seats, which have the cod piece. What's the polite way to talk about the thing that's in the middle of your legs when you drive the seats?
The bumper.
I think it's
the bumper.
I think it's a bolster. I think it's
it's bolstering, all right. The seats are fantastic. Like they're in carbon fiber shells. Like I imagine they are lighter weight than the standard ones, although they're still really nicely trimmed. They're beautiful to look at. They're really nice to sit in. Surprisingly, I think you guys can disagree with me, but I remember our former colleague Brandon Turkis telling me that he's both tall and kind of a big guy, but I'm 4 inches taller than him or something like that. We both really like these seats a lot. They're really hard to get into and out of because your leg is always sort of getting like hung up a little bit on that big carbon fiber bolster in the middle of it. But essentially, they're they do a better job than just about any other seat without a racing harness in it that I've ever been in of keeping you in place under lateral G forces, which is really great. So this car's a riot, man.
I like these seats a lot. Like you said, they are really hard to get in and out of, but once you're in there, like, they are tight. They really hold, and they're not like too uncomfortable either. They're pretty form fitting. Like the lumbar support is okay, so they're not too bad. I drove one last year from SFO to Monterey. I had a manual M3 with those seats driving around Pebble Beach, which is, let me tell you, the perfect car for that. And I mean that sarcastically. But yeah, I actually really do like those seats after spending a little bit of time in them.
Yeah, I agree. I didn't do any long trips in this, but I did drive it a lot. I drove this a lot more than I do most cars. It was fun. I was able to get this car over a weekend that was sort of a long staycation for me, where one of my best friends in the world came to visit from Texas. And so we spent a lot of time. We went out on where I will go if I have the opportunity and need to do like a longer drive and kind of handling loop around here. So river roads, like one of the few sort of hilly areas hilly areas around me. Put a lot of miles on it and put a lot of gas in the tank at the end of the day. But absolutely made this week of driving this car worthwhile. It was like really good and also thrilling in a way. I don't know when the last time you guys have done this, had somebody in a performance car that isn't usually in performance cars and you get to take them around and really drive aggressively. But it's one of my favorite things to do, not to scare people, but you know, we kind of get jaded and forget that most normal people are driving the same car. You know, they get a new car every couple of years mostly, but they're not driving everything certainly. And they're usually not driving anything even approaching this level of performance. So even when you're just going a little bit hard on your favorite road near in your neighborhood or something, it can be really shocking to somebody who's not used to that, to feel that kind of acceleration and braking power and cornering ability, especially, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I think the M3 is a good car for that because it's, it's like, it's not like it's not a supercar, right? It's still like a decently affordable sedan, I guess, if you're looking for something in that segment. But it is also affordable-ish.
It's $110,000.
Yeah, okay, never mind.
But I mean, like, they can be had for 60 or 70, or for 70, though, so... You know,
sure,
but
some of that is this special edition to be very clear, right?
But it is super, super capable, like super quick steering, very good engine, very good suspension. So, like, if you want to show off a little bit to somebody who, like you said, maybe doesn't drive performance cars a lot, I think this is a fun one to do that in.
Were you subtly teasing the topic of our next happy hour with those rear seatbelt anchors?
Yeah. So anybody who's coming in from or watching this from Motor One will might be disappointed to learn that we're not actually prepped. It was a scheduling conflict on my end, but we were talking about doing a segment at the end of this podcast about the best supercars for dads, right? And I know Jeff just said this M3 competition isn't a supercar, and I would say in the absolute sense he's right, but if like me, you have a need to put kids in your car, and listen, somebody who can afford this car can probably afford, you know, a true supercar as well that they just drive themselves. They don't have to worry about their kids at all. But the reality is that's not always that much fun because you end up just driving one car out of convenience. You don't want to move seats around and all that stuff. So the question is, what are the quote unquote supercars that you can put your kids in if you're somebody, whether you're a dad or a mom or, you know, an uncle or a grandparent or something like that, that you can have kids in and they can be safe and in proper car seats and things like that. So we'll save that for next week because I'm not prepared. I ran out of time and I'm not prepared with that list, but I do think it's a really entertaining list with some surprise entries on it for sure.
What's the what's the 0-60 on the M3? Speaking of supercars, do you know?
It's 3 seconds on this car.
3 seconds, like 3 seconds flat?
Flat. Yes, exactly.
So that's faster than like a Ferrari Enzo or a Ferrari 458 Italia, just for supercar comparison. That's insane.
It's as fast as like the last generation of most McLarens, right? It's as fast. I have to look. I haven't looked it up, but I think it's as fast or faster than like a 570S.
That's insane.
In a car that weighs, what is it? It's close to 4,000 pounds. It's around, yeah, you know, 3,900 pounds or something like that with all wheel drive. You guys have been in this car or in versions of this car, but I remember doing the launch of the M5, the first all-wheel drive M5 that had a version of this same all-wheel drive system, and being really blown away with it on the track. This car is super fun. So there are three all-wheel drive modes that you can put it in. There might actually be more if you dig in settings, but there are three that are sort of easy to configure in your configuration setups for bigger programs. There's this kind of normal all-wheel drive. There's a sport all-wheel drive, which just doesn't, which allows for a little bit more slip, right? Like to whatever wheel is getting the power. And then you can just put it in straight two-wheel drive mode too. And it's wild to me when you get like how subtle the four-wheel drive effect of this car is when you're cornering, as noted by when you turn it off, right? Suddenly you've got like all... I don't know if BMW would say that 100% of the power goes to the rears in that mode. Probably it's close, if not all of it. But it feels like a wildly, wildly different car when you just switch that drive mode and put it in two-wheel drive. Way less pinned down, way, way looser for the most part. Even when you're driving aggressively in all the normal settings, the car feels wickedly fast. But it also feels like you can't put a wheel wrong, right? You just can't screw it up. And suddenly you change just that, let alone any of the other DSC settings or things like that. And it's it feels like it's really alive and like it can bite you if you do something, if you screw it up a little bit, which for me is really entertaining. And it's a progressive way to experience your $110,000 super sedan in a very different way, right?
That's rad.
Yeah, super fun. I dig it. I've driven one of these before. That wasn't the 50-year anniversary version and really enjoyed it, but I had much more of a special connection. It was a great week with it. So enjoyed the hell out of it this time.
Do we like those 50-year retro badges that they put on them?
Sure.
Yeah. I think they look pretty good. I mean, this is a tough car to sell. Like, it's not a tough car to sell. I'm sure they're all sold. This M3... Like, do we need to go back into that? Do we need to rehash the sort of schnozziness of the M3 and the polarity or the polarizing design is what I'm trying to say, especially of the front end. It's lots of people hate the way this thing looks. I think it's a straightforward way to say it.
Yeah.
I think that pulls it off a little bit better in a dark color over when the grill is dark and your accents are dark, because you're sort of muting some of the stuff that's really challenging design wise. But I get it. If people don't, it's not a traditionally beautiful sedan. That's for sure.
Well, you were talking about the Lime Rock M3, which is my favorite M3, I think, of all time. And they did that same Lime Rock orange on the current one. And I saw it a few years ago. They had it at Amelia Island, and it was offensively bad, I will say. that orange does not work on this generation at all. And it's a cool color, but oh my God, on that car, it just accentuates every giant, you know, crazy detail on the M3. It's not a good look.
Yeah, I agree. It was great on an E92, or at least, you know, it looked appropriate on an E92 and maybe not quite so good on this newer, bigger, nosier version of the M3. But I don't know, like it's less shocking now than it was the first time that I saw it. I don't think that you're ever going to convince me that this is a very pretty design, even though it's an incredibly impressive car that I love to drive. So,
Sorry, go ahead, Brett.
No, I was just there are fixes too. The aftermarket has come in and they've built grills that are less insane and front bumpers that are a little bit more cohesively designed. And there's fixes out there if it's something that's a problem for you. If you've got $115,000, $110,000 to spend on this car, you can make it exactly what you want it to be.
Yeah, and I think the proportions of the M3 work way better than the M4 with
very
that big
much.
Grill and the back end and the wheels. Yep. And I really don't hate the design. I actually think it looks pretty like kind of cool. Like you said, probably in dark colors. But yeah, compared to the M4, I think the M3 is still the way better looking of the two.
Yeah.
And honestly, it almost has aged kind of well already. I know it's only, 2 years old at this point, but like, it's already kind of looking a little bit cooler as it gets older. I know the shock factor was a big thing when it came out, but I don't know. I definitely don't hate it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're all starting to get used to a little bit, but I also just want to call out, I was reminded of this, you know, I know you talked about it a little bit. Things are different when you're driving somebody in the car and you sort of want to say like, hey, here's the thing that it can do, right? But as I'm looking at the steering wheel, I've always loved the idea, and this is not a new thing for this car. BMW has had those M1 and M2 configuration buttons on their steering wheels since, the last generation M6 is the first one that I remember it on, but I don't know where they came into play. But the idea there is you can set up different programming, right? So for suspension, steering, throttle response, or the engine mapping program, and a lot of other things, like you can get changed at the touch of a button. So there are two things about this experience that made those worthwhile. One is going back to a month or so ago when I was in Italy with Alfa Romeo. We were driving Giulia Quattroporte Quadrifoglio, excuse me. And it was really frustrating because there were two very different kinds of driving that we were doing. And they didn't have this kind of personalization setup where you can change all the systems from one to the other. And in reality, it was kind of a hassle because you had to do like three or four different things every time you changed from kind of highway driving to city driving. And that was a bummer. And then the other thing is the depth with which you can customize the experience of driving this car, as we were talking about with the four-wheel drive, is really different. You can make it change quite a lot. So like when I'm going from the streets right around my house and stuff are really broken, I have like kind of a rough approach angle to get out of the alley that feeds my house and things like that. I want it in softer settings. I don't want it to be, I essentially want as much suspension compliance as I can get a lot of the time that I'm driving. But then when I'm going out anywhere fun, I want to change that almost immediately into something more aggressive. And so I just used these systems more this time, this week driving the car than I think I have maybe ever in a BMW. So I had a big appreciation for it. I think maybe I've had a tendency to think of it as a party trick before to show off all the different stuff that the car is capable of. And this time I was like, it was more practically useful than it has been for me in the past.
I mean, all the adjustments that you can make to that car are overwhelming. So like in my mind, the M1 and the M2 buttons are mandatory. Like being able to just, you've got one for sporty road driving and one for aggressive track driving or something like that. And just like have it set to the two settings that you use the most. I really hate the way that BMW does their drive mode select, with the exception of the M1 and M2 buttons.
Yeah, it's a pain to configure the settings, agreed. And you have to be parked for a lot of it. But once you do, if you kind of know, well, there are two or three ways that I like to drive, then makes it really, really, really simple to do. So I think for owners, it makes a ton of sense. It's a little bit harder when you're testing the car. But right on. Well, like I said, exciting group today. I want to thank everybody for watching. I want to thank you guys for joining. Sorry that we don't have the dad supercar list. Oh, here we go. Sorry, Kyle's pulled it up. We did have a Chrysler 300 in purple.
It's the rebranded. Oh, gross. The first one before Kyle ruined it is hell rate. That's the Dodge Hell Raisin color, but Chrysler calls it amethyst. So enjoy. Go get yourself an amethyst 300S with the V8.
Oh my God, I love that. And then for those of you who might not be watching, then we've just got a fully donked out. Is that a Rolls Royce grill on this? Sure. You know, just everything that you can do in a very lurid, high gloss purple 300 that you just, I mean, I'm sure that car lives in Detroit. Maybe it lives in, I don't know, it could be in New Orleans. It could be in LA too. It could be any number of a lot of fun places to drive it, but
I think
not for
actually
me.
This one exists on Photoshop and Photoshop alone, but.
Oh, you think so?
I don't know. I can't tell. Those wheels look huge, but I guess some donks do that. I don't know.
Don't ruin my dreams, Brett,
I'm going to go find it for you. I'm going to go find it at the local show, and I'm going to send you a picture, and I'm going to let you live your fantasy.
Have you guys ever driven a donk?
No, I want to really bad.
Okay. Okay. Maybe we should put the ask out there. J-Dubs, hello. J-Dubs 07 says, not even Prince would like that. You never know. You're probably right. Prince is actually a pretty stylish guy in spite of, or maybe because of his love for purple, but maybe everything else about that is un-Prince-like. Yeah, maybe we should put the ask out there now for anybody who sees this video. If you are in, and we've got great locations for it, right? If you're in Southeast Florida, if you're in Miami-ish, Los Angeles, or Detroit-ish, and you have a donk that you want Motor One to drive, please, by all means, you can reach us at podcast@motorone.com. Email us and let us know. We'd be happy to come to you. Maybe we'll even buy you lunch, drive your donk, take some pictures of it, and report in on the next happy hour. Let's see what that nets.
Also, I have to do a big old mea culpa because this purple 300C does indeed exist.
Purple Haze.
Lowrider Magazine.
Purple Haze.
What is it's in Arizona? Do I even want to know? No K girl is the
N-O-K.
I don't know.
And
N-O-K girl?
We're probably going to stumble on an accidental. It's going to be really fast.
Purple Haze. All right. If the owner of the Purple Haze that appeared in Lowrider Magazine is watching this or is a friend of somebody watching this, let's get in touch. Let's see what we can do. We could also just go to SEMA and probably ask somebody to throw us the keys and do this as well. But it'd be more fun to do it at home.
Let's do it. Purple car or not, let's make it happen.
Well, maybe now it has to be purple. Now I've got a taste for a purple dog. All right, and that's enough. Thank you all for watching. We appreciate you. We're going to be back next week at 2:30 Eastern time, 11:30 a.m. Pacific time with more test cars. Next week, for sure, we're going to have the supercar or the list of the best supercars for dads and maybe some other fun stuff too. Who knows? But we appreciate you all, and we'll see you on the next one. Bye, guys.
See ya.